Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 20, and the Steelers just got their ass whooped by the Philadelphia Eagles, Dave, 34-3. I don't know that anybody who follows this team closely saw this coming.
Yeah, I don't know what direction we should go today. Should we try to put lipstick on the pig, or should we try to put more mud on the pig and then try to hose it down real well?
Or should we just call it a day?
Yeah, thanks for listening. We'll be back when things are better.
Call Craig Oxane.
Yeah. Most definitely on that. Boy, I wouldn't have been... I'm trying to figure out the right way to phrase this. I guess I'm not overly shocked that the Steelers lost. But if you would have told me that Ben Roethlisberger would have played the whole game and, you know, not been injured, and the Steelers would have only scored 3 points, I probably would have questioned you on that. Most definitely, you know, any given Sunday in the NFL, for sure. I mean, we see the Buffalo Bills rebound and do what they did yesterday against the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, who really kind of saw that one coming? You see what the Patriots did to the Texans on Thursday night with a third-string rookie quarterback and shut the Texans out. I mean, you know, anything's possible, obviously, in the NFL. But, I can't say for sure I saw a 34-3 beatdown against a rookie quarterback coming.
And I think it's obviously – look, I think fans would be frustrated no matter how the Steelers lose, but when they get absolutely dominated and embarrassed like that, then it just raises all sorts of questions. If it's, you know, like you said, you asked me on Friday, what's the narrative going to be? I was going to say, you know, don't turn the ball over. You got to be, you know, you got to be more consistent tackling, blah, 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 blah. Well, this was, I mean, when you get dominated like this in every aspect of the game, look, you want to look for silver linings. One, it's a wake-up call. Everybody realizes that the press clippings and 2-0, well, that's out the window. You just got your butt handed to you so badly. The worst loss of the Mike Tomlin era that, yeah, you know, there's a bunch of pride in that locker room, and those guys got to get back to work, and that's across the board. I mean, you know, when I'm writing the good and bad of the game, the good paragraphs are very short.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a defense that gave – look, I mean, we're going to have plenty of time to digest both sides of the football here, and we're obviously going to start probably on a defensive side here. You know, they allowed 34 points in addition to, what, 426 total net yards there. And, you know, look, tip your hat.
And that's what the Eagles – you know, basically, you know, they punted 4 times and 3 of them were their last 3 possessions. I mean, the Eagles didn't completely shut it down, but the Eagles basically shut it down. I mean,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And Carson Wentz, look, tip your hat to him. A good talent, a great game plan for him. He threw for 301 yards. And while, you know, look, I'm not taking anything away from what Carson Wentz did in kind of my synopsis here. You know, that, and I wrote about this, you know, that looks impressive on the stat book, you know, in the stat book, in the game recap. But you should probably know that he only completed 4 passes during the game that flew more than 8 yards past the original line of scrimmage. And what did I write and talk about, you know, last week? Yak.
Got to control the screen game. Got to control Yak.
Got to control Yak. And Darren Sproles and Ryan Matthews combined to catch 8 passes for 147 yards. Sproles had 114 yards after the catch on his 6 targets. Now, that 114 yards, you know, people got to remember, that's not all from the line of scrimmage, because he caught, what, 5 of his or several of his passes, a few of them at least, were thrown behind the line of scrimmage. And 5 of his 6 catches, the pass flew less than 3 yards past the original line of scrimmage. And you know, they did a great job of getting the, you know, those kind of misdirection screens and that kind of stuff. And then, of course, on the 73-yard touchdown that Sproles scored, Wentz did a great job of scrambling outside the pocket, and Ryan Shazier was kind of left in no man's land, you know?
Yeah, you know, you can say he got caught looking in the backfield or whatever you want to say, but, you know, he's got to deal with both. He's got to make two decisions there, and
both are wrong.
Yeah, you know, you're not going to win either way. But obviously the touchdown is so damaging, but he's got to think that there's somebody back there at some point. Yeah, it's hard to pin that on Shazier, but that's exactly right. I don't even know that it was a designed wheel route. I think it was more into the flat. And then with the scramble, you basically got two attackers on one defender. In any sport, that's exactly what you're looking for. And they got what they wanted. So, well, Dave, let's start with the injury report, because one of the things is, you know, a loss is a loss, but it's one game on the schedule. Injuries can be debilitating going forward, and we'll see. Obviously, the Steelers are one of the least forthcoming teams in terms of getting medical information out after a game. So we might have an idea tomorrow from Mike, and we'll have a better idea Wednesday with the practice report. But the Steelers obviously got dinged up in this game. They left battered and bruised in their egos, and they left physically battered and bruised. Shazier, I'll let you fire through it, but it sounds like the Mike Mitchell injury is not too serious, and maybe Lawrence Timmons, I guess he had a deep gash that required stitches. Maybe his isn't all that serious either.
Yeah, and Ryan Shazier left early, even though he tried to return several times. Mike Tomlin said after the game he aggravated his MCL during the first quarter of that game, first defensive play, really, if memory serves me. Robert Golden suffered a hamstring injury in the first quarter. He didn't return. Let's see here. Ramon Foster suffered either a chest or an elbow injury. Mike Tomlin said, I don't know which one, after the game was over. Foster, of course, entered the game listed as questionable with an elbow injury, having been limited during the week, I think 2 days during the week in practice. So that meant B.J. Finney saw his first action of his NFL career at left guard on Sunday. And as you mentioned, linebacker Lawrence Timmons suffered a lower leg shin injury, and boy, you could see the kind of the blood on the sideline there. He had to go to the hospital. I think Jay Glazer said later on in the afternoon that they thought it was some sort of maybe an artery or something, you know, a deep enough gash that's why he had to go to the hospital. He, of course, returned later on, you know, after the game was over, and I presume flew back with the team back to Pittsburgh after the game was over. Eli Rogers is another one to watch here. Boy, it looked like when he went down on that pass pattern, Dave, I thought hamstring right away. I thought, oh Lord, that, you know, looked like somebody shot him right in the back of the leg there. But it was initially termed, I think, a toe injury by the Steelers staff, and then after the game, Mike Tomlin called it a foot injury, and you just hope that it's not that same foot that he, you know, broke last year during early portion of training camp and, of course, had surgery on. So that'll be one to watch when Mike Tomlin addresses the media on Tuesday. And as you...
Yeah, I'm guessing Mike just went with a generic foot because it was a toe injury. So that was kind of how I read that. And, you know, you look at these. Shazier now, you wonder if this is going to linger the entire season. My guess is obviously Golden's going to miss extended time. Eli Rogers is going to miss extended time, and we'll see with Foster.
And then Mike Mitchell has a knee injury that's currently being evaluated, or was after the game, according to Tomlin.
And he said, I guess, on his Twitter feed today that it's not serious.
Good.
He should be good to go. So banged up, battered, and bruised in more ways than one in this one. Dave, you did mention Carson Wentz. And look, a quarterback rating of 125.9. A 23 or 31, I think you said it right. He executed a fantastic game plan that the Steelers had no answer for.
Absolutely. You know, they mixed in the screens there. We knew that a lot of short passes were coming to try to get him in a rhythm. Knew he was probably going to use his tight ends. One thing that I wrote before the game is I want to see Carson Wentz throw the ball down the middle of the field, and he did a few times, and he was on target with it. So, you know, props to him on that. He wasn't asked to make a lot of those kind of throws more than 8 yards past the line of scrimmage. He only completed, like I said, what, four of those throws that he made, but it was more than enough. And, you know, this thing just started to snowball right from the get-go. The Steelers drove down the field, looked like, all right, here they go. You know, I thought when they got down deep there, I said, okay, you know, they're going to score here. They obviously had to settle for a field goal attempt, and then that was blocked, and then, boy, just like the whole tide just shifted right then.
I don't know if this went through your mind, Dave, but for me it was deja vu at Cleveland 2 years ago when they dominated that first quarter. And who was the holder back then? Brad Wing, you know, mishandles a snap. The Browns go right down the field and end up smoking the Steelers. I mean, I had something like 31-10 or so, if I remember correctly. And I just had that feeling. Obviously, the Steelers didn't dominate this in any way, but they had that opening drive. Wheaton drops the ball. You look back and go, that was the highlight of the game. There you were. The opening drive was the highlight. And I was hearing on Twitter, I don't know if you heard this as well, from all the people on DirecTV who were like, you know what? We didn't get to see that because we're not in Pittsburgh and we're not in Philadelphia. And so we had to watch the end of the Browns and Miami game. And then they pulled the Steeler game, I guess, early in the third quarter because they were getting smoked so bad. So that was, you know, I don't know if it was good or bad that a lot of people didn't get to see the whole game. But that was as good as it got.
Yeah, absolutely. And, boy, you know, we talked several weeks now about the return of Marcus Wheaton and how many snaps he might play. He ended up playing more than 20 snaps in the game, but I think you would agree at this point we wish he would have played less.
Yeah, he got benched. I mean, look, he was in there early, three drops. He got benched, and Eli Rogers' injury forced him back out in the field. I think he played 27 in total, but, yeah, that's not what we were looking for. So yeah, let's I don't know, which side of the ball do you want to start on? Equally bad. I mean, somebody asked me, you know, I gave your answer. They said, who do you think was worse, the offense or the defense? And I said, yes. You know, where would you like to start?
Yeah, I think defense is the appropriate spot here because I think a lot what happened with the offense was a byproduct of falling. Now, look, no excuses for Ben Roethlisberger. He wasn't sharp in this game. The offensive line, the Steelers' offensive line, was just absolutely manhandled. But I think a lot of what didn't happen on offense was a result of them falling way behind on the scoreboard. Even though 20-3 is not damning, I mean, we see teams, you know, maybe every other week, you know, make a game of it. At that point, the Steelers just couldn't establish any rhythm whatsoever on offense after falling that far behind. And you know, even later on in the game, the Eagles, you know, had their way even running the football, gashing the Steelers up the middle with some runs with a guy named Wendell
Smallwood,
Barner, you know, Kenyon Barner. Of course, Sproles had a big game out of the backfield as well too. And the receivers, I think, weren't there even a couple a drop or two in the game on top of it, and some stupid, you know, penalties on the Eagles to boot that probably could have made this game a little bit more worse. But you know, I think it kind of goes back to the Steelers defense. Did the injuries hurt? Yeah, but with that said, you know, you have to have that next man up mentality. And on top of it, you know, and I think our charting will show this, you know, once you had Robert Golden go down, and then of course the Eagles getting out to a lead there, there wasn't much dime being used. You mostly saw base and nickel personnel on the field. And, boy, if you would have told me that guys like L.J. Fort and Vince Williams would have both played over 50% of the defensive snaps in the game, I would have told you that was probably because the Steelers were the ones that were you know, taking it to the Eagles, and that those guys were able to play the whole second half kind of thing. So it was just a beatdown. Their offensive line handled the Steelers' pass rush, and boy, David, you know, we keep going back to this about the pass rush and about the outside linebackers.
Yep.
This team has one sack, if you want to call it that, through three games, and that one sack was after like 7 seconds, and after Arthur Motes had dropped into coverage. This is not good. This is not good.
Yeah. So let's stay with the defense here because you did a good job of recapping a lot of things there. So, you know, two primary causes for concern on the defense, two of possibly many. One is, you're absolutely right, they're three games in and no sacks. And you look at the numbers for the Steelers yesterday in the game. They had zero sacks, one pass defensed, and three quarterback hits. James Harrison had two of those quarterback hits. The corresponding numbers for the Eagles were four sacks, 12 passes defensed, and eight quarterback hits. It is a dramatically different game when you're banging guys around. And you're dead right. Ben didn't play well. And last week it was, you know, you can put some of the blame on the adverse weather conditions. And this week you could put some of the blame on the pass rush. But, I mean, this pass rush, they're not getting close. I mean, Anthony Ciccolo almost got home once when Tuitt did a good job of covering the check down guy or the guy on the screen out of the backfield. And Harrison got there twice. And now you have to ask the question is, do you need to have James Harrison on the field more? I mean, Charlie in the postgame show was just adamant. He said, look, you've got one guy who can rush the passer, who's proven he can do it. Jarvis has, what, five career sacks in 40 games? And Ciccolo's, you know, he's not going to get there regularly. And Moats is not a sack guy. So are they making a mistake not playing James Harrison more this year, Dave?
Probably. Look, I mean, 38 years old, he's your best pass rusher. Well, I mean, what is that saying for people that are saying, well, we're going to get Bud Dupree back at one point?
You got 5, 6, 7 games to go if you get him back.
Right. And what kind of football shape is he going to be in? I mean, and just look, I mean, he's still turning that proverbial corner. We really don't know, you know, what he is. And we're talking about a kid too in college who really didn't light it up with the sack numbers, if you remember. So there's not a—
Are you willing to say 3 games into the 2016 season that Jarvis Jones won't be a Steeler in 2017?
Oh yeah, I was ready to say that way before the start of the season. I mean, as soon as they didn't pick up his fifth year option, you know, I think that was pretty much, you know, cut and dried right there.
I mean, Jones is getting 70% of the snaps, and I realize he's not rushing every play, but you know, you can't have a goose egg. I mean, just you can't. So, but maybe something will change here. But that is a massive concern. So Keith Butler's going to have to pack up the, okay, we can get home with 3 or 4, and that's the way we're going to play, because he's going to see the exact same stuff this week from Kansas City and Alex Smith. Doug Peterson was Andy Reid's offensive coordinator. I mean, Kansas City's going to look at this game tape and say, well, that's the blueprint. Obviously, the Steelers are going to try to adjust accordingly, but, you know, it's just not working that way. So you got to figure out who you got to bring and where you got to bring them from, because this isn't getting the job done. And I'm not going to give Hayward and Tuitt a pass either. Tuitt had a couple tackles for loss, and these guys have done some nice things in the run game, and they're still very good players. But they don't have a sack either, and they both led the team last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, they just got, and look, when they did even send a sack, I put up a still shot on Twitter this morning, and Alex Kazora included in his article kind of bashing the Steelers pass rush this morning, that shows I think it was William Gay blitzed on that side, and the Steelers still only sent, I think, 4 on that play. And there's two interior Eagles offensive linemen looking for a deck of cards.
Having lunch, right?
You know,
yeah. Because I mean, Will Gay got chipped. I think it was Darren Sproles. I remember, if I'm remembering the right play, Sproles chipped him. He went at his legs, and, you know, he didn't get a big piece of him, but he got enough. And, you know, Wentz got the ball out of his hands in 3 seconds, and, you know, that was that.
Absolutely. And you know, I think we need to see more of these corners playing up a little bit more, just to start taking away some of this rhythm. You know, Mike Tomlin right now, after that game, prides himself on the ball. You know, last 2 or 3 games, really priding himself on the ball not going over their head. Okay, that's fine. You're not getting beat over your head, but you're still giving up explosive plays. What is it, 13 or 14 explosive plays so far the Steelers have given up? 9 have gone to either a running back or a tight end. And how many of those were screens? I mean, an explosive play is an explosive play. Okay, you're not giving it up over your head, but you're still giving up that yardage. So, you know, I don't know what the answer is. Do you need to play more cover 2? With your corners playing up and kind of force teams to start trying to take those chances more to beat you down the field if you're only going to rush 4 players along those lines, you know, it's just.
Let me ask you a question that a caller last night asked, and I initially dismissed it. But with Robert Golden hurt, does Shamarco Thomas come into the equation? Do you look at him and say, well, there's a guy with speed, who can hit, who may be as equipped as anybody to deal with some of these backs out of the backfield. Is it time to think about taking a look at Shamarco Thomas?
You know, that's funny. I was laying in bed early this morning staring at the ceiling thinking about the game.
Boy, don't go any further than that.
Look, I mean, that's my wife has to get on me sometimes. Shut it down, Dave.
Whoa, what do you mean? Okay, yeah. All right.
Yeah. She just shut it down. Why can't you just shut it down, you know? And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, Shamarco, in his limited playing time, has played relatively well in the box, and I use that term kind of loosely. Now, obviously, you go back to you go back to his rookie season where he had to play in the slot, and we all know what happened there—the 200 and something snaps that he played in the first eight games. Feed Shamarco a couple of steaks and turn him into a nickelbacker, right?
That's exactly right. He becomes however you want to use him, not, you know, a safety walking down on the, you know, whatever. Sean Davis is a hybrid type of guy. Shamarco can be that hybrid type of guy. He can be a spy. When you got mobile quarterbacks, an Alex Smith type, he can be a spy who has to deal with, you know, who's ever coming out of the backfield.
That way he gives you a guy that at least you know can come up and stick his helmet into the fan and stop the run. At least we think he can. You know, obviously you don't want to get Shamarco out in space having to tackle, right, as a deep safety, because we've seen.
No, but I wouldn't mind having him run at guys who are catching screens.
Yeah. And look, we both know this probably isn't going to happen. But I mean, if we're sitting here trying to tinker how maybe we can make this defense better, and especially if you have a guy like Robert Golden's going to miss some games, because I mean, what are you going to do now? I mean, you got to play Sean Davis as a safety now, and then while some of that will include him playing in the box, what if you do want to play a lot of cover two? And what if you do want to get a guy like Lawrence Timmons off the field and still play more of the dime? Then I think a guy like Shamarco has to be considered as kind of a, you know, kind of a hybrid type linebacker safety kind of guy. Now, obviously, do you want him running with a guy like Gronk in a few weeks? You know, we've seen that movie before already as well. So it's just a mess right now, David. And quite honestly, there's no reason to think the Steelers have a championship defense.
No, and, you know, we got excited. You know, I think, you know, obviously it looks maybe a little prematurely about how well the secondary was playing. But, I'm not going to put a ton of this on the secondary. I'm going to put it more on the front seven and the game plan. Look, they missed some tackles, but Sean Davis made a couple touchdown-saving tackles, you know, proved to be, you know, just delaying the inevitable one or two times. But I don't know. I wasn't – like you said, look, these were all checkdown stuff. I don't look and say, oh, you know, Will Gay got torched or Artie Burns got torched or, you know, Cockrell. They caught one pass in front of Cockrell on a 3rd-and-12, which was a good throw, and Dorial Green-Beckham made a good catch. So, okay, other guys make plays too. But I'm not killing the secondary today. You lost Golden, so that gives you some questions. But, you know, Shamarco Thomas's skill set, it might be something that's a little different than what you have in that defensive backfield. And so if you're going to continue to play at least some semblance, I can't imagine Keith Butler's going to play the exactly same, you know, as they said with personnel, if it didn't work with the personnel you had, why would you bring him back? Well, if the scheme didn't work, why would you keep using it? So they'll do some things differently, but he may be a guy who can provide a different skill set that might be useful.
Makes you appreciate Troy Polamalu even more now, right? All those years. All those years he kind of played in the box, and then, you know, pre-snap he's up there in the box, and then you turn around, snap, and he's 20 yards down the field in a deep safety, a cover two type thing, you know. Now, obviously, you're not going to get that kind of stuff out of a guy like Shamarco Thomas, but you know, it's just one of those things to kind of think about. And I'll be surprised if we see it. I mean, look, I mean, if Golden's out, I mean, what do you do? Play nickel?
Well, I mean, yeah. So the other option, obviously, is if you're going to go, you know, do you move Sean Davis to his more natural position, which I don't have a problem with that either. And then it's Justin Gilbert in the mix, you know, Shamarco. I mean, Jordan Dangerfield's not going to see the team. I saw you tweet this, and you're 100% right. The transaction list is going to be active this week, and hopefully the injuries to Golden, and more specifically maybe Eli Rogers, are not IR type injuries, because you got to assume if it's IR, it's a season over job. But you know, they can't carry all, you know, you can't carry, you know, more than the group that they have if these guys are going to be out for 3 or 4 weeks. So tomorrow and Wednesday are going to be important days to figure that kind of stuff
and
out.
And Thursday, because that's when they have to have the roster move with Le'Veon Bell. We know at least one move is coming. And here's the thing with Jordan Dangerfield. If Golden's hurt, I mean, you can't
do anything with him.
You can't do anything with Dangerfield, you know, because, A, he gives you a lot of snaps on special teams. And look, at least he has some experience, preseason experience playing safety. So you almost are forced to kind of keep him on the roster for several reasons as far as that goes. So yeah, and that's why I tweeted that out, because not only with Bell, I just think you're going to have to make a few roster moves here, at least one more maybe, because of an injury pulling a guy up from the practice squad or something. You know, we'll see what it ends up being. Hopefully Timmons is fine by this week. Hopefully Shazier seems to be saying that you know, he's fine after the game. We'll find out about Golden, I'm sure, as the week wears on as well too. But man, what a mess. And if you're not getting pressure on opposing quarterbacks, and then yet you know, if you want to blame it on the quarterback getting the football out, fine. But you got to make those tackles if the ball is coming out quick, and especially to the running backs who just have been chewing the Steelers up right now.
They have. And let's take a brief pause, Dave. Steelers Nation, mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage. Craig's a lifelong Steeler fan, like many people, probably head buried firmly in the sand today, and a Pittsburgh native. He's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out Terrible Podcast listeners. Call Craig today at 866-772-0471. That's 866-772-0471. Or we've got a really easy URL for you. You can apply online at Black and Gold Lending. How good is that? blackandgoldlending.com, company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois residential mortgage licensee, equal housing lender. All right, Dave, on the offensive side, a disappointing game for Marcus Wheaton, a disappointing game for Ben Roethlisberger. The offensive line got smoked. I feel bad, you know, picking out DeCastro specifically. You said it, I said it. Skates, push back into the quarterback, whatever term you want to use. You got a holding call against him when they actually still recorded a sack. I think two calls on Ali Villanueva. Gilbert gave up one sack last year. He gave up at least one in this game. Nobody gets it. Nobody gets any kind of anything other than a failing grade from the offensive
line.
Yeah,
no free rides here. And don't forget, DeCastro was the one on that blocked field goal at the left guard.
Yes,
left guard spot.
Benny Logan,
yeah,
right?
that allowed the penetration there and the block field goal. So, boy, a lot of people questioned the Eagles giving Fletcher Cox all that money during the offseason, and now I think a lot of people are questioning the Steelers giving David DeCastro all that money instead. Now, look, David DeCastro is a fine guard. That was I think you can go back to a couple years ago to that game against the Bengals and Geno Atkins, and those two games, that one and this one on Sunday, would probably rival as his career worst games. Those things are going to happen. He certainly was manhandled. It looked like Fletcher Cox was moving him like a piece of furniture.
Straight back. I mean, it really, you don't see bad guards in the league get moved like that. He just moved DeCastro a couple times, just straight, you know, up. Straight back, four steps right into.
Yeah, and you know, Marquise Pouncey's not off the hook, not a good game. And when Ramon Foster was in there, I don't know why they try to run that counter to the right side, because look, nobody will probably stand up for Ramon Foster's play, consistent play more than maybe me over the last couple of years.
Yep.
But I still shudder when I see Ramon Foster have to pull to the right on a counter, because he's just so slow coming out of his stance, and almost becomes a roadblock in the backfield there. No holes up the middle. I wrote before the game that maybe the Steelers should try to at least test the middle of the line, being as how really we didn't have a lot to go on. And because I think going into yesterday's game, only five runs up the middle against the Eagles defense with an average yards per carry of like 10 or something. Not a large sample size for sure. But I think we saw yesterday outside of a few runs to the outside by D'Angelo Williams, the running game, there wasn't much there. And then when you get down on the scoreboard as much as they did, it takes the running game out of it. And then at that point, when defensive ends in a 4-3 defense don't have to worry about playing the run on the way to the quarterback, they can just pin their ears back and go. And then at the same time, they're doing it with only four guys, so that means seven guys in coverage. And on top of that, those seven guys in coverage are being told not to let the ball go over their heads. So it makes for tough on a quarterback to try to be patient and try to make some throws. And when those four pass rushers are getting pressure off the snap, it makes it even harder on a guy like Ben Roethlisberger to complete the underneath stuff. And Antonio Brown was the only one on offense that really, really did anything in that game. And didn't have
that many meaningful catches, to be honest. I mean, he 12 for 140 looks nice, but targeted 18 times. I thought at times he had trouble getting separation. So the stat numbers look nice, and the Steelers couldn't even move the ball well in garbage time. So that tells you how rough it was offensively. So yeah, I'm not knocking Antonio, but the Steelers scored 3 points, so he wasn't very influential either.
Yeah, and if you notice, and it'll be more interesting to see when the All 22 comes out. Luckily, we were shown a few, like on the long pass to Sammy Coates early on in the game. If you watch the aerial of that, you'll see how the Eagles would try to show a one deep safety look with their corners up, but at the snap of the football, that kind of box safety, if you will, would drop into more like a cover two, and that's how they would kind of try to bracket Antonio Brown on his side. So Antonio Brown did have some nice guy. Boy, that one that we call him Tony Toe Tap, we'll have to call him Tony Heel Tap after that one catch that he made on the right sideline over there. I thought there was a nice back shoulder throwing catch kind of early on in the game to Antonio Brown. But, they didn't.
Yep. Those were kind of almost, I know exactly those two plays. And Steelers were still in the game. He drew the pass interference call as well.
How many Malcolm Jenkins were on the field yesterday?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Dave, I thought the pass interference calls, I thought both of them were questionable. The one, who was the one on the Steelers where he wrapped his arm
William
a little bit?
William Gay.
Yeah, I thought that was questionable, and I thought the one that the Steelers got, that Antonio Brown, I thought that, the kid from LSU, I thought had pretty good position and turned his head. I don't think I would have thrown the
flag. Yeah, Mills on that other one there, and boy, that was going into that game, you thought, boy, what a tasty matchup, whoever.
How silly, dude. I mean, it's not like we were the only ones saying it, but I figured the Steelers receivers would absolutely torch these corners.
I did too. I mean, I really did too. I really thought, whoever, say they're going to bracket Antonio Brown. Well, that should leave guys like Marcus Wheaton and DHB and Sammy Coates. That is some tasty matchups on that other side opposite Antonio Brown. Just how bad it went, that ball, that deep ball late. I mean, it would have made a damn bit of difference. But the deep one to DHB, that ball was in his chest. He had that ball first,
Yep.
The corner, of course, made a good play and ripped that ball out and all. Like, I mean, it was just that kind of day for him. And, boy, Marcus Wheaton. You go back to that, the playoff game against Denver, right? Kind of an identical sort of pass to Wheaton in the end zone, right? That he dropped, sort of, kind of. Do you remember that? Wheaton having
yeah.
some deep drops in that game on some key downs and distances there. And look, I understand that the defender kind of had him shielded there in the back of the end zone, but that thing hit him right in the breadbasket. I think you could have caught that one, David.
I put the picture on Twitter, and you know, I said, I, you know, again, talking to the post game, and I hope everybody gets a chance to listen. It gets replayed on Steelers Nation Radio if you don't. But Charlie and I are on across the Steeler Radio Network immediately following the games. And, you know, just like Dave and I, there's not a ton of analysis in a game like this. You're not talking about, you know, a specific play situation. One play made a difference here and there. I mean, you got outcoached. With the, really, the coaching and the schemes are as much of the analysis as anything, because the Steelers got out-executed across the board. Nobody, you know, we're trying to find Antonio Brown as a guy who had a good game, and Jordan Berry, again, being a guy who is a has been a dominant guy for the Steelers when you're talking about who are their best players. But, you know, you look at the whole thing and, you know, it's a disaster. And so, you know, I asked Charlie, if he catches that ball, does anything different happen in that game? And I think the right answer is, look, you're playing with a lead. You're not playing from behind. You got a rookie quarterback that you're playing against who's going to now, you know, have to come back from a deficit. So maybe that's a little different. But certainly in terms of the guys on the field and the execution, it's hard to imagine things would have been very different sooner or later.
And then you follow it up with a block kick, you know, right after that play. So, I mean, very, very, very disheartening. You know, another throw in the game that Roethlisberger missed was kind of that crosser to Jesse James. And if you watch the replay of that, this is another one that I can't wait to see the All-22, because even the replay is a little bit damning. It looks like Jesse kind of stops, you know?
I heard saw somebody say that on Twitter.
It was
and
me.
I was actually I saw somebody else asked me on Twitter, and you know, I was in studio at that point for the second half, I think, and so there's not I don't get to watch it. I can't rewind it and watch it 10 times like I can do at home. And so I didn't see that. Either way, it was a terrible throw by Ben. But yeah, because I mean, it looked to me like he was running flat, Dave. So I wondered if stuff mattered or not, because to me it looked like Ben overthrew him.
Well, yeah, and it's hard to tell whether or not even if Jesse continues running. I think, and I might be wrong on this. I think when kind of plays take after like 3 or 4 seconds or so, such as that, I think Ben expects his receivers to break off
and
go. You know, and him kind of lead them for an explosive play. So, look, I mean, it wasn't a great throw. It wasn't a great play all the way around, but it was an open option there that the pass should have been completed, whoever you want to put blame on. And Roethlisberger, none of this is excuses for Roethlisberger, because he obviously was not sharp at all. And, boy, you know, what about that fourth and five play? And look, I have no problem with the decision to go for it. I believe it was
the roughing, the running into the kicker penalty from the, I think the 33. I was all for it. I said I like the decision, all for
it. Yeah, but the thing is, did you see the Eagles line up that kind of line of defense way
yep.
off the ball there?
You can't throw that. You can't throw that pattern.
Right. You know, and they went up underneath, and I guess I understand why they went up underneath. But I mean, nobody hates a quarterback throwing short of the chains more than I did. And how many times did Ben Roethlisberger do that in this game?
And we saw him do that later, right? You commented on it, a fourth and, you know, a long fourth down where they, you know, the Eagles lined up 7 defenders across the line at 12 yards, and they threw something short to, you know, D. Will or whoever it was. AB, I think, and, you know, didn't get
it. Yeah, it just, I mean, you would like to have seen the offense respond. Look, the loss was going to happen regardless. If you're going to keep – let me just see, totally switch gears here all of a sudden, because this is the way my brain works, unfortunately. I have a lot of respect for Ben Roethlisberger and Ben Roethlisberger not wanting to come off the field, but at some point, man, right? I mean,
so this again was a burning conversation on Twitter, and everybody in the media chimed in that this was stupid, and I asked Charlie, he's got a different perspective, and Charlie absolutely said, when you're out there in that type of situation. He didn't use the term go down with the ship, but he said, you want to battle with your guys. You don't want somebody to say, I'm taking you out. You know, you were terrible too, but I'm taking you out because we don't want you to get hurt. And he said, you know, you're one of the guys. Now, Charlie can say that, and Mike can say that too, but the fact of the matter is the reps don't make a significant difference. And if he does get hurt, well, you're torching your season. So I get the mentality that you're all in this together. But sometimes, you know, it shouldn't be Ben's decision, and Mike shouldn't risk necessarily the future of the season, the significant drop off you're going to have at quarterback when a team's bringing the pass rush that they're bringing, to, you know, because of the machismo or because of the camaraderie. The fact is, Ben is more important and he is more significant than anybody on that offense. So you can't do it. You have to have, you know, I was with you that one last drive to start the fourth quarter. Okay, miracles happen. You have him out there. You know, he's getting run over again, and they turned it over, punted, whatever they did. He shouldn't have been out there with 10 minutes to go.
Right, right. And look, I totally understand the mentality of Ben Roethlisberger, I'm not faulting him for that at all. And I understand what Charlie's saying. I totally get all that. But at some point, the coach has to handcuff him and then just tell everybody else, this is my decision. You know, Landry, get in there and mop this thing up. And let's move on. Let's pick our teeth up off of the blades of grass that we are not defending today. You know, look, hindsight's 20/20. He got out of the game without an injury, so you know, it's an easy narrative to blast Tomlin on as a.
Although I think everybody was blasting him on it. You know, I mean, maybe it's an easy narrative to not worry about now, but I think everybody was having a conversation during the game, and It just doesn't seem that it seems like it's a no upside deal. Look, again, in any game, or virtually any other game, you know, even down 17 points with kind of 6 minutes to go, I get it. You score a touchdown, you recover an onside kick, you can win the game. That's a game they weren't winning with 10 minutes to go. And it probably won't happen again this season. Might not happen again for three seasons. But in that game, he should have come out.
Yeah, and early on, I wrote in my in the morning how I wanted to see maybe some of these RPOs with those screens off to the side to wide receivers. First one worked good to Antonio Brown. The second one not so good to Sammy Coates. But they seemed to kind of get away from that. Boy, when your running game isn't working and you're down on the scoreboard. And you know, the opposition is trying not to give up the explosive play. I would have liked to seen a little bit more of those bubble screens or something, just as an effort to maybe to get the feet. Look, and you'll make Antonio Brown happy at the same time. You'll end him with the game with 17 receptions and just giving the ball to him out in space to kind of see what can happen there. But you know, it was a giant snowball effect. And when you get into that second half down as much as you are, and they know that you can't run the football down in, down out, you're just asking to get teed off on, and that's exactly what happened. And look, I'm not concerned about the offense. I'll leave it at that. I'm really concerned about the defense right now, and especially being as how we're going to see a KC Chiefs offense that striking similarities to what we just saw this week with a more experienced quarterback in Alex Smith, you know, who not great. You won't hear me singing the praises of Alex Smith, but you know that we've seen that short West Coast, you know, passing game work, and if he's on target and takes what's given him underneath, assuming that that's the defensive game plan that the Steelers are going to play again, you know, Alex Smith will gladly kind of take it because that fits right into his wheelhouse, and you know, dump it off to the backs and try to work the Steelers up the middle with the run game.
All right, Dave, like I said, I mean, you know, we'll get a chance to go through the all 22 a couple times. There's not.
Let me ask you this real quick about Ryan Shazier. This is eating at me as well, too. Knowing what you know right now, would you pick up Shazier's fifth-year option?
Yeah, I'd pick it up. I mean, I'm not going to not do it because of injury concerns. You know, we can debate forever whether guys are brittle or injury prone, and certainly the speed with which he plays, the size where he plays, and where he puts himself. Yeah, he's at risk, but I think he is enough of an athletic talent that I was singing his praises and have been singing his praises for most of the past 2 years. I think, you know, you hope that, you know, Ben had a lot of injury issues a couple of years back, you know, kind of year after year, and we've seen him put together, you know, relatively healthy seasons. You know, I'm picking it up.
I'm not sure I am right this moment. Hopefully I change my mind. So, you know, hopefully he's able to stay on the field and make, look, I mean, when he's on the field, there's no doubt he's, I mean, a very, very explosive player, can deliver you two or three tackles for loss and can be great in coverage, but he's got to stay on the field. And I tip my hat to him trying to come back in that game yesterday. And, you know, we'll of course see how this is moving forward. But I mean, this is an MCL sprain, right? That's what Mike Tomlin called it. So this isn't all of a sudden, this boo-boo isn't all of a sudden going to heal the rest of the season. You know, if they get him to the bye, you know, may, you know, that extra time off will obviously be good for him and you know, how all that stuff goes there. But look, this defense, we joked in the podcast, time or two ago, me talking about in the draft, drafting what, 7-8 outside linebackers.
Yeah. It's going to be like your Browns thing. Draft 7 quarterbacks. Yeah. Steelers need to draft 6 edge rushers.
Yeah. Because right now, I mean, there's no reason to think how many sacks did this unit have last year? 43, 44, something like
48.
What are they on pace for now? One through
four.
You know, they'll obviously, you know,
played 3 games, so five and a third.
You know, that's not going to cut it. Look, sacks are not everything. I get that, but pressure is, and they're not getting that on a consistent basis either. And there's no reason to think right now at this point in time that this is a championship defense. Now, this offense can get this team into the playoffs without a doubt. But as we've seen time in, time out, when you get into the playoffs, you better have a complementary defense, because a lot of teams will have a good defense when you get into the playoffs, and your defense will have to make some plays. And right now, they're not there, and now they're banged up on top of it. So that's something else to look at. With all that said, the Steelers opened up, what, 5-point favorites over the Chiefs, four and a half points, and I think that line has grown since then. So they'll get the Chiefs at home. They really need to rebound.
Yeah, and a couple things. One is, I don't want anybody to think we're letting Mike Tomlin, Keith Butler, Todd Haley off the hook here. They are absolutely fully engaged in being responsible. This is a cross-the-board player execution, game plan, everything. Everybody's involved. Also, let's just one more time, Steeler Nation, mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or even just refinance, call Craig Octane at First Advantage Mortgage. Craig's a lifelong Steeler fan and a Pittsburgh native, a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out Terrible Podcast listeners. You can call Craig Octane today at 866-772-0471. That's 866-772-0471, or apply online at blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399. Illinois residential mortgage licensee, equal housing lender.
Would you have gotten Justin Gilbert in that game late?
I thought about it late. Who would you take out for the reps? I mean, would you take Cockrell out? I think it might have been much the same thing. But yeah, I would have gotten him last series or two, kind of like Artie Burns got in the Skins game. I would have put him on the field for a few plays.
Is it time to put Justin Gilbert back there on kickoff returns too?
Absolutely. I mean, it was time the day they got him.
I agree, and hopefully,
who gets cut for Le'Veon Bell? Darryl Richardson.
That's a tough one, I think, because of his kind of skill set. But I think that's the way I go. But I mean, right now it wouldn't shock me if it's either one of them, to be quite honest with you.
So it's probably not Stevie Johnson, right?
I suppose it's possible. But with two linebackers dinged up now. Do you really want to shrink that even more? I mean, I suppose it's definitely possible. Look, the Tyler Matakavich
he saw the field. Tyler was in their goal line.
Yeah,
I'm
not predicting Tyler not to get a helmet anymore for all of his fans out there. I did that now a couple of times, and he's dressed, and no more of that. He won't be up on my inactive prediction list anymore going further here. The thing is, now will Ramon Foster be able to play? And you know, that'll cause Hubbard to get a helmet again, one would think. Yeah, we'll see what the rest of the transactions shake out during the week. At least they don't have to make a move on Le'Veon Bell until Thursday at 4 p.m. And we'll see if injuries dictate another practice squad move, maybe having to take place maybe on Saturday or something like that, because or you know, because they play on what, Sunday night against the Chiefs here.
Yep.
I don't even know what to say anymore. Did we put enough lipstick on the pig?
Well, I think we did it just the service
all
it deserved.
Right. Folks, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button in the top right navigational bar. Oh, we'll be back on Wednesday, hopefully with a Chiefs beat writer, and talk a little bit more about this debacle that took place Sunday in Philadelphia.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.